Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men and talk about it. Oh my God. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to another episode. If you're hearing my voice and you're like, he sounds a little sick, I am. Once again, my fucking daughter has gotten me very sick. I'll be fine. I'll live.
Is that your daughter in there?
Is that my daughter in there? That is a reference to Mystic River. Great
Do you
movie.
Actually sound more like Sean Penn with a little bit of a throat thingy?
Yeah, he's nasally. He's a nasally guy. He's more nasally than I am, so that's fun. But yes, I'm sick, but I'll be okay. Shout out to Twitter user Mr. Piss for pointing it out that I am.
For our next series, instead of a TV show, we're just going to be reading each page of the Adventures of Bob Sugar or whatever Sean Penn's alliterative novel was.
Oh, I'm very excited to do that. Yeah. So if you want to help me with my medical bills, this was really tortured. but you go to patreon.com/frogcast and you can listen to bonus episodes as well as you can get all of these episodes a week early and give us 5 stars in review. And thank you so much for doing that. Thank you for listening to the world's only Mad Men podcast. Mad Men, a show about how real men used to stab people with bayonets. That's what it's about. And today, we're going to be talking about from season one of Mad Men, episode 7, Red in the Face. And our guest is a returning Pod Yourself champion. You heard him talking about The Sopranos when we covered The Sopranos. And now it's time, once again, to bring back from the Blowback podcast, blowback.show. That's the website. Brendan James.
Hey, everybody. Good to be back.
Good to have you back, man. So excited to talk about another thing in the Sopranos universe, sort of, because you know, Matthew Weiner, he was a writer on The Sopranos, and this takes place in New York, which is just down the road from New Jersey.
And Tim Hunter is the director of the episode who did Sopranos episodes, right? I think he did. I could be wrong.
You might be. Listen, we know very little about things like the writing staff or the, you know, like showrunners and stuff. Any bit of like behind the scenes trivia we find not just like moot, but almost counterproductive.
The guest is always right. You know, that should be the. Yeah.
That's true. The guest policy is always right. We always assume everyone else knows more about the show than we do. But to start out, Brendan, I want to ask you the question everyone has been wondering, what's your favorite advertisement?
Honestly, those Japanese commercials with Arnold Schwarzenegger in them where he's freaking out and like screaming, and I don't even think he's speaking Japanese.
No,
he's just screaming and like his head becomes, it's like the Mr. Sparkle ad, you know, like in Simpsons, like his head becomes a temple which becomes, you know, him again. I don't know. I love those. I don't know what they're for. I couldn't buy the product, but
I don't remember those.
Well, I love it. For those listening, which is everyone, he's in this, I promise you. He's just being hit in the face by a Japanese man.
There's one.
You know, it doesn't work on audio, but it's great.
It's kind of key for you to see Schwarzenegger in this context, but
yeah.
But he's great, and I support whatever product that was as well.
I do. Yeah. Like, that is my favorite genre of commercial, is the ones where, like, I don't even know how to apply the knowledge gained by the commercial. Like,
yeah,
I was thinking the commercials that I never see anymore. Do you remember BASF, where it's like, BASF, we don't make a lot of the products you buy. We make a lot of the products you buy better.
And you're like, no, yes, I don't know this
good
at
to
all.
Know, I guess. Like, I'm not looking for, I don't know how I would apply that. Or my favorite of the recent ones, and UFC sponsors are always the best, but the latest UFC sponsor is VE Chain, the official blockchain of the UFC.
Oh, damn, they got their own blockchain?
No idea how what I'm supposed to do with that of information. But.
Well, there's an episode of Mad Men where they're working for Bethlehem Steel, and it's a puzzle because they're like, well, we're not selling this to a consumer. We're selling it to other producers. How the fuck do you do that? You
know? I just want people to know we're cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's weirder with the blockchain stuff because I don't even think the consumers know what they're doing with that. Whereas, like, I could see what someone would do with Bethlehem Steel. Even the... you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger ad, I'm not sure what it's for, but there's certainly some sort of elixir being sold.
Right. Yeah.
I assume I put it in my mouth and I drink it. Whereas the blockchain stuff, I'm just like, man, this is really popular for something that does nothing.
I think you put those in your mouth as well.
Yeah. Blockchain. I think you also eat those. I mean,
that you just probably. Make a server farm in your basement and then you just clap your hands together like, I did that.
Yeah. And it's then there. You make sure that a poor, you know, South American village is well runs dry. Brendan, is this a show you've seen before? Have you seen Mad Men? Are you a Mad Men head?
I am. I'm a man head.
You're
and
a man head. There we go.
I'm happy to be here talking men. Because it was what was the Mad Men after show Chris Hardwick thing, because there was Talking Bad, Talking Dead. Was it Talking Men?
It had to be Talking Men, right?
I mean, because that's funny if it was. But I am actually fairly recently a convert. I just didn't get around to it for a long time, which is my whole thing with TV and movies and books. And when I finally did, a friend of mine showed me the pilot, and I thought that was really good, but a while ago. I still didn't get around to it. And then the other day, like maybe a month or two ago, actually, it was weird, your guys' timing. I just popped on episode 2 and then mainlined it. I just completely blew through it, and I loved it. It's up there. It's up there.
Yeah.
It's nipping the heels of the Sopranoses and the Deadwoods and the Larry Sanderses.
You know, I am hoping one day I can get Vince here to watch all of Deadwood.
I'm much more of a Larry Sanders head than a Deadwood head.
Dead yourself a wood.
I mean, we can easily dead ourselves a wood. I feel like we could Larry ourselves a Sanders, but I feel it's just one of those shows that I don't know if I've never done a sitcom rewatch.
Yeah,
you know?
Not as much continuity.
Yeah,
but.
It is not a show about Larry Sanders or Deadwood. No, it's a show about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start this podcast without first playing the theme song.
Mad yourself, man. Mama always said you'd be there. Chosen Mad Men. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad man. Podcast.
All right, ladies and
now
gentlemen.
We're pumped.
And everyone else, we are pumped up for today's episode, which is, of course, season 1, episode 7 of Mad Men, and it is called Red in the Face. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
Oh, this is an easy synopsis for this one. Roger Sterling gets drunk and hits on Don's wife, so Don pays him back by making him walk up 25 flights of stairs after eating 3 dozen oysters and drinking 7 martinis. It's about how dudes rock.
It is about how dudes rock. But what was happening at the time that this episode is set in, Vince?
That's right, Matt. We cannot understand art without understanding the time period in which it's set. We haven't really come up with a good version of this one, but we'd like to do put some of that context back in with a little something that we call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of news.
A lot of news
back.
Is happening in the 60s.
And back in the 60s, August 30th, 1960, some of the stories that were happening. Nixon slammed his knee in a car door and it got infected and he has to be in the hospital for 2 weeks.
For slamming his knee in a car door?
Yeah, totally normal amount of time to spend in the hospital for a knee infection.
What the fuck? Okay. I feel like there's more behind that story, but I don't know if there were any journalists out there investigating it.
Yeah, and listen, I've been in the hospital overnight with a knee infection before, and I don't know what he was doing there for 2 weeks, but...
well, they didn't have medicine yet in the 60s.
I guess not. Other stories, a time bomb killed the premier of Jordan.
You don't get a lot of time bombs anymore. I just now realized that. A
they
time
don't need
bomb.
Them. No one will, you know why? It's this culture of instant gratification.
Absolutely.
No one wants to wait for the explosion anymore.
It's this goddamn hustle culture. Everyone's got ADHD, you know, they don't have time to sit and watch a ticking clock.
Assassins, these Zoomer assassins, they're just like, just do it now, you know, and they just snipe him, you know.
Yeah. I did want to save my full text stories to really drive home the point that we've been driving home like this entire season, which is that America is just like a feral dirt child wearing a suit, which is basically what this show is about. But that's like the subtext of every news story that I've found from this era. Here's one. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. A boy, a frog, a fireman made news.
Okay.
A frog, a live wire, and a fireman mowing his lawn all played a part in young Frankie White's narrow escape from death. The three-year-old boy's father, W.D. White, gave the boy a frog he found Saturday, and the boy started across the street to show it to some friends. On the way, he touched a wire dangling from an evaporative cooler in which there was a short. Frankie fell lifeless to the ground. Fireman Donald Wizenhut, who had been mowing...
I'm sorry. There was he was holding a frog. He said, "I gotta go show my neighbors," and then he just
touched a live wire
near a live wire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fireman Donald Wizenhut, who had been mowing his lawn, ran to the boy and applied artificial respiration. The boy began to breathe after 5 minutes and was taken to a hospital. 5 hours later, he regained consciousness. The boy was in good condition yesterday.
Did the frog die?
I think, that's a good question. You'd think the frog...
He was holding the frog.
Reminds me of that part in Jurassic Park when Tim, the little kid, gets blasted by the fence. And there's frogs in that, too, because of the frog DNA.
Oh, that's right. Yo, there's a frog live wire connection here that people need to open their eyes to.
Where the woke mind virus that turns people trans came from?
And the frog's gay?
Yeah.
First the frogs get gay, they get zapped, and then you get zapped.
Exactly. Poor kid. He grew up to be a freaking, who's a woke figure? He grew up to be freaking Chappelle Roan.
There we go.
Here's another one about how, I'll just read it. ND farmer shoots three sons, kills self.
Farmer?
And North Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Guelph, North Dakota. A one-armed...
I'm sorry.
Where's that in part? Is that the sister city from fucking Narnia? Yeah. Guelph or the Guelph? Witcher 3?
We may not be wealthy out here, but we're Guelphy.
Okay.
Stupid.
A one-armed farmer apparently shot his three sons, burned their bodies in a haystack, and then took his own life. Dead were John Beck, 47, and his sons John Jr., 13, Robert, 11, and Alan David, 8. Coroner Dr. Ellis Oster termed the deaths murder and suicide. Cool. That's just, you know.
That's a really dark story, dude.
That was the original pilot of My Three Sons, and then we thought. Maybe we should change the premise a little.
Yeah. All right, last story. Mrs. Powers collapses after arrival in U.S. Mrs. Barbara Powers, who left her U-2 pilot husband behind in a Russian prison, collapsed Monday as she stepped from an airliner that brought her back from the United States. The attractive 25-year-old wife of Francis Powers was sobbing as she stepped down the ramp of the plane after it landed at Idlewild Airport. Seconds later, she put her hand to her forehead and fell while making a turn into a cement walk bordering the terminal building. She was revived and walked unaided into a public health room to rest.
She was a prisoner?
No, her husband.
Gary Powers, yeah.
Her husband, got shot down in a U-2. His U-2 spy plane got shot down.
Is this what the movie Bridge of Spies is about? Because I only know about it. Bridge of Spies.
No, this is about a plane.
Oh, it's a plane of spies.
It's a spy plane. It's not
the opposite of a bridge.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys. All right.
In an interview with Newsmen later, Mrs. Powers frequently broke into tears. She said she was not satisfied with what the American government had done to aid her husband, who was sentenced to 10 years in prison after being convicted of espionage by a Soviet military tribunal. She did not elaborate on the statement, but, you know, she's attractive and 25, so that's the important
thing. Yeah, they said that part. I'm glad they included that.
A really hot woman fainted. We didn't do anything. Okay.
If they didn't include that, that would have been like page 5, you know.
I think you're properly contextualized.
All right, now we can finally get into this episode, knowing
a lot of that comes up in this episode.
Yes,
so.
The Nixon thing does. The frog does.
Nixon does come up.
Yeah, Nixon thing does. I mean, you know, not the knee thing, but we do talk about Nixon. We talk about Kennedy. And let's talk about this episode. So initial thoughts, everyone. What did we think of this, Vince?
Like I said, this is an episode about your boss making a pass at your wife, so you trick him into eating too many oysters. classic bit. This is one of the more focused episodes of the first season of Mad Men. I would say, like, this is clearly like the toxic masculinity episode.
Sure.
And like I said, this is a show about a society where we're pretending that we have no past and that we're not feral children, but everybody's in this as sort of a feral child trying to present the appearance of like adulthood.
Right.
And there's a lot of masculinity issues that go along with that. Everyone's got a bit of a bugaboo about like trying to please their dad. And that's basically the whole episode.
I agree. It's an episode about wanting to return, but with a V instead of a U. You know, like the like the fascists do.
Sure.
Brendan, what did you think of this episode?
I liked it. I remember, so I've only recently watched the whole series, and I rewatched it today because I didn't want to wing it. And I remember liking this one a lot because it was the first moment with Roger vomiting that I kind of perked up a little bit more. Like what I like about the show is, like Sopranos, it's kind of what you expect in the first season. It's a slick period piece, you know, dames and whiskey and cigarettes, and it all looks great, but it's somewhat more conventional and in the boundaries. But then you know, let's just say season 3, the lawnmower, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just, and characters go in all these interesting places. And I think the second half of the show being dedicated to trying to get Roger to throw up, and then he does, and it's this white goo. I was like, oh, okay, I'm more invested in like definitely seeing this through. So it's a good episode, and it's interesting. It's an interesting character episode for Roger because it almost like risked making him almost a minor antagonist or a heel, which is really not what you think of Roger as. So, but that's probably because of how Don puts him in his place by the end. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. this episode I thought I agree with the, you know, characterization of it being about like toxic masculinity and stuff. And what I like about that is that it's already the 60s. So like looking at this from like a 2024 vantage point, it is really funny to watch a period piece about guys in the 60s who pretty much their entire interaction with women is like different ways to sexually harass them, still looking at themselves as like victims of modern womanhood, you know, like Pete would just, he just wants to return his chip and dip and buy a gun, and his goddamn wife, his shrill wife, is yelling at him for it, you know.
I like how Alison Brie got no camera time, but she gets to be an off-screen voice shrieking.
Yeah. Has she been in the show at that point, or is this the first?
Yeah, she's been in the show. But just in this episode,
it's weird that she's not on camera, but I guess it's kind of an effective shot.
It's
for
really
her.
Effective. Like it's a great shot. Just because, you know, you seeing Pete, who has been previously emasculated by the customer service people at whatever department store he's returning the chip and dip at, you know, seeing him like regain his masculinity by buying a gun that he got, because he only was able to get store credit. His store credit for the chip and dip bought him a gun, makes him feel masculine. He's in the office pointing his gun at people in an office, and then cut to the shot of him sitting slumped in a chair next to his gun while his wife his wife yells at him for returning the wrong chip and dip.
I just thought that that he was lying about there being two, that he just returned a chip and dip because he didn't want it.
He wants the gun.
I think he likes the chip and dip. He's very excited about it.
When I saw that, I was like, everybody's making fun of it, but like, I could use a chip and dip. I like to entertain, and I like dips. So
yeah, but this is a podcast of beta males, you know. Everyone else is like his, you know.
You say that, but the other thing that about this episode is when I saw them eating oysters and drinking martinis, like I unironically thought that looks fucking awesome, and I could crush about 40 oysters and like 5 martinis in a sitting easily.
I would like to combine like a chip and dip and oysters and martini glass, like connection, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, just like, mm-hmm. just do it all in one. Yeah.
I would say the chip and dip, the episode really should have been called Chip and Dip.
Yes.
I understand red in the face, but Chip and Dip is said so often that it becomes like a mantra
that
lifts you above what a chip and dip is and takes you somewhere.
It's a totem. I wrote down like there should be a drinking game with this episode where you drink every time someone says the word chip and dip. Because they really do repeat it like 17 times, and it gets funnier every time. It's like Baba Booey.
I cut down the scene in which she's returning the chip and dip, and the amount of lines in which that just repeat over and over because we've got two. It was a gift. I don't have a receipt. It's a chip and dip. What is a chip and dip? Here's what it's like. It is fucking great. And
I also think this episode, not to put too fine a point on it, mm-hmm. is a good advance over the first half of season one. I don't know how far into season one we are, but certainly the first few episodes, which you give a show some, you cut them some slack, but the sexism, especially in the pilot and the first couple, is just so smothering. Like all men do is just say, "Hey, honey, why don't you wear a shorter skirt?" It was actually objected to, I think, by some people at the time of like, I worked in this industry. It wasn't like that. There's a more, I'm sure there were, of course, elements of that. We all know that, but the show gets much better at exploring sexism and the patriarchal aspects of the office and outside the office beyond every guy always leering at a woman. And it actually like is much more, of course, compelling, but you know, like Ken Cosgrove in the pilot is just like this complete nasty, like grab him by the pussy guy. And for the rest of the series, he's not like that at all. He never hits on any woman in the office. He's actually one of the more kind of, you know, wholesome characters in the show who's not all fucked up. Pete Campbell, it's a different story, but I liked how this episode went, okay, we're not just gonna have guys doing the cigar chomping thing. We're gonna look into how Don sublimates his anger at Roger through being nasty to Betty while using the analyst and, It's just more interesting approach.
And it's also, and I like that the depiction of Pete, because, like, in the first episode, you're like, man, this Pete guy fucking sucks. This is, like, one of the, I mean, and he never really grows much past, like, hating him. Like, you always hate him, but it really shows that his detestability comes from this sense of trying really hard to be accepted and like noticing that everybody treats him like a boy. So he tries to emulate these like male figures in his life who are like mostly dickheads. So like he's kind of, I mean, not that he's like a good guy, but he's like, he's returning the chip and dip. He's like not drinking with the boys. Like he has this, he has this natural, you know, I don't know if you want to call him a nice guy, but like he gets in there and people are just sort of like, are dismissing him because he's a little circle faced baby. So he's like trying to, he's trying to emulate his like leering buddy from Male who's talking about banging his bridesmaid. And it's like, okay.
Right.
And then, you know, it's like a very on the nose, the old Norman Mailer, you know, give us a gun.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's like, he becomes the sissy with the gun. I mean, he doesn't kill anybody, but I'm pretty sure that's where that
wasn't that Roosevelt that who said sissy with a gun or Vidal or that was or
Gore Vidal, right?
Gore Vidal.
Yeah.
But yeah, the scene in which he's returning the chip and dip, I have the audio of and I just want to play it because it's great.
I'm here to return this. There's nothing wrong with it. We got two.
That's why we suggest that people register to avoid duplications.
Yes, the register.
We did register.
Yes, they mentioned that too.
Do you have your receipt?
It was a gift. It's a chip and dip. We got two. It's practically four or something.
I suppose you don't have a receipt.
Gosh, I wish I did. No. It was a gift.
Humps the Camel Campbell.
Matherton, what are you doing here?
Getting my racket restrung. What are you doing here?
Returning a wedding gift. Chip and dip.
What is it?
It's a chip and dip. You put chips on the side and dip in the middle.
It's a beaut. Good to see you. We should do this sometime. I'm coming back for you.
Do you have a receipt?
No. I might have already said that. It was a gift. By the way, Matherton, he has the clap.
Just fucking beautiful, like...
He's just emasculated anew every time he has to say the word chip and dip.
Yes, and a beautiful display of like, impatient patience that he is showing that...
Yes.
I was
you know
just
what's a great touch? You know what's a great touch there too is that Matherton has a nickname for him, but he just calls him Matherton, which implies there was a domming or bullying relationship from the beginning. Like they don't exchange nicknames; only one of them has a nickname.
Right,
and it's Humps,
Pete the Camel Campbell. He has like two nicknames.
He's got a bunch in one go.
Yeah. Well, I got a bunch of different animal names for you. I don't find you human, Pete.
Yeah.
It's also relatable because every time you're trying to return something and someone's like being someone's giving you pushback, it's like, this isn't your fucking money, why don't you relax and put this in the fucking stock room and give me my money and we can both go on with our day. What the fuck?
Nothing happens to you, just let this, you're not gonna get in trouble. What I love about this scene too, we were talking before the podcast started about the world we live in which all customer service is being replaced by AI chatbots, and then you watch this scene in which you have to tell multiple people multiple times you don't have a receipt, you got two of them by mistake, yes, you already signed up for the registry and you would like some money for this, please, like over and over having to repeat the same things. I realize, you know, it's not that customer service was perfect before AI chatbots, but at least you could sort of ask one of the customer service people for a date, you know, you could kind of hit on them.
Exactly. Like, yeah, there was someone there to sexually harass.
You could at least appeal to them on a human level, if not a horny level.
Can I digress for a second here?
Please.
About the chatbot customer service that we're like infecting every aspect of our life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Destroying everything.
Destroying the fabric of our society. I went to a McDonald's because I wanted to try that chicken Big Mac, which was not bad. Well, whatever, it's pretty good.
Look at you.
I was enjoy your E. coli.
Enjoy the boycott. I'm sorry. Go on.
So they're doing a thing where they're doing a thing in the McDonald's where they're trying to get people to order from the automated kiosk.
Yes.
Because they want to have fewer staff because less, you know why they're doing it. And so there's like, you try to go to the counter and they're like, no, you got to order from the kiosk. So I go back, got to order from the kiosk. The kiosk has like little table standees that you put on your table so they can bring your order to you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can imagine the same problem that I'm imagining, is that you are trying to reduce staff with the automated kiosk. Meanwhile, you're instituting table service, which requires staff at the same time. And so now you have people in the back. They're just running around. They're trying to make food. They're mm-hmm. trying to answer questions from the people in the dining room, deliver food.
Right.
They're also like dealing with, like, there's a bunch of people in there that got like the wrong order because right. it's fucking McDonald's. It's not set up for them to do table service. It's like the whole thing.
And they also have to troubleshoot the kiosk problems because half the time people are like, I'm pressing the button and it won't make me a burger.
Yes. So they're like trying to reduce staff in the stupidest way possible and making it so much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how if RFK becomes Health and Human Services, he'll make burgers more expensive with his like crusade, which is good, actually, part of him. With the automation of jobs, there's a lot of drawbacks, but it makes me go to McDonald's less because I fucking hate the giant obelisks that don't give me my burger.
No, because they can't do the one thing that they're set up to do, which is give you consistent food in a timely manner. Like, that's the only reason they exist. And then you go across the street to a fucking In-N-Out. The food is now cheaper at In-N-Out. They have a ton of staff and they're notorious for like actually paying their staff. Like, they've always been the one that like pays their staff a decent wage. And so you're like, oh,
notorious
McDonald's
for better wages.
They are. I mean,
infamous.
So you're like, oh. If you say McDonald's sucks now, there's always going to be someone who's going to be like, oh yeah, it's because the fucking minimum wage is so high and they had to get rid of the staff.
Right.
And then you're okay. So
no, it's because of HAL 9000 giving me, I'm trying to order the burgers. I can't let you do that, Dave. I mean, I can see like the red eye pulsing as I try to order it. So
Oh, it all fucking sucks. Like, you can hope for is, you know, that it remains just being a fast food problem, but it's already at like banks. It's already at every fucking thing. There's always going to be
pizza left beef is like every aspect of fucking society now.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay. Don't worry. I went to college with the obelisk's son, so I have a connection there. Me and
I just think we all agree things were a lot better in the 60s,
yes,
especially for guys.
'60s were a great time when men could be men. When men
guys
could
in suits.
When men could send their wives to a therapist and then spy on them by asking the therapist, "What did you talk about?"
The therapist, good actor. Don't remember his name, but this is a feature I'm not sure if you guys have touched on yet. It's a little feature I was thinking of during this rewatch called "Is This Character in L.A. Noir?" The game.
that's a
have
good
you talked
segment.
About this?
No, I've
okay,
not.
Well, you could wrench hours out of extra show stuff you need because I will briefly mention every time we come across one whether this actor was in L.A. Noir if they were, because I'm pretty sure that's an Australian game and they saw Mad Men, the guy who made it, and was like, well, the 40s are kind of like the 60s. Let's get all those America. Let's get all those actors because there are fucking dozens of actors from Mad Men in L.A. Noir.
Is this why there's like sometimes you see like a meme of a
Cole of
Kenneth Cosgrove? Yeah.
Same doubt. He's the main character. So that's the first one. Okay. We already mentioned Ken Cosgrove is the main character, Cole Phelps, in the quite good game L.A. Noir. And and we've already mentioned Pete. Vincent, what's his name? Vincent
Kartheiser.
Kartheiser, also in L.A. Noir.
Whoa.
I'll just pop in every time there's another one.
Dude, this is all right. So this has got to be a segment that we do, and also gives me an excuse to play the game L.A. Noir, which I'd never played, but
you
I've
should.
Always thought looks fun. Can you play it on PS5?
You can play it on PS5. The way, I forgot the coroner. That's why I brought it up. The coroner in the game is Betty's analyst in this episode.
Crazy. Well, that will be a segment and we will have a sting coming soon. So let's start with this Don and Roger and Betty storyline here. So we start with Don calling his wife's therapist and asking for an update. And he gives this particular update, which I thought is interesting. Here it is.
What has she been talking about? Mostly, she seems consumed with petty jealousies and overwhelmed with everyday activities. Basically, we're dealing with the emotions of a child here.
So what's fantastic about this, it's fantastic on multiple levels, but one thing that I love about it is literally Dawn spends this episode consumed with petty jealousy and and overwhelmed with everyday activities. Like the idea that this is it's women being women. This is how women be, man. They're always, you know, they're always blabbing. They're always jealous and whatnot. And that's Dawn to a T. I mean, he spends a whole episode mad at Betty because she was polite to Roger.
Right. Yeah. I couldn't stop thinking about Justin Long in Idiocracy. Like, you know, like, sorry, man, your wife's fucked up. Her shit's kind of retarded.
She talks like a fag and her shit's all retarded. Yeah.
Well, it's like, I think it's a Sopranos universe, Matthew Weiner, Chase hatred of psychiatry. I think they clearly are not. Melfi doesn't come out looking great at the end of The Sopranos.
No. Yeah, it's true. And the only thing this show is missing is a Livia Soprano character saying that psychiatry is a racket for the Jews. Yeah. But I bet at some point, it's been a while since I've rewatched this whole series, so I bet at some point someone says something similar to that. But yeah, so
Roger Sterling, I might say that later.
100% he would say that. He definitely does an episode in blackface, which we're really looking forward to talking about. We have Roger now drinking milk and vodka, talking to his wife on the phone, saying, don't worry, I'm drinking my milk. I suppose there was a time in which you actively encouraged people to drink milk for health reasons.
No, for an ulcer.
Oh, as for his ulcer. Oh,
which he reawakens later in the episode.
Yes, he does. We find out that the Nixon boys are going to be showing up at the end of the week. They got to get ready to pitch them on how they're going to sell Richard M. Nixon to the world. So Roger wants to spend the weekend with Joan because his kids and his wife and kid are going to be out of town. And Joan is, too busy.
Prime Kumar time.
Yeah. But Joan has a roommate who, she'd rather spend time with, I guess. I don't think Joan
she wants to go away. She wants to get out of the city and do something fun. And
yeah, that's right. And Roger wants to do is lock her up in a hotel room like a caged bird.
Interesting choice of words, Ben.
Yes.
Matt, sorry. I said Ben. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of this character in L.A. Noire now. Go on. Were you in L.A. Noire?
I was in L.A. Noire.
Wow. Okay.
Do they show Culver City in L.A. Noire? Because I might have been in it. Oh,
no,
damn.
I don't think they do.
So Roger is sad and lonely and horny, and he's like, Dawn, please come out. Please come out to the bar with me before you go home to your hot wife. And they go out together, and there's this scene at the bar in which, like, they're both, like, smoking and drinking. And, Roger is the theme of this episode, with regard to Roger is him hating how young people exist. Mm-hmm. But also wanting to fuck all of the young people that he sees, realizing that he is just, he's just not as hot as a young, sexy Donald Draper.
That's like, right. Yeah.
These two
he sees
girls,
them
are,
ladies at the bar.
Yeah.
Their eyes follow Dawn. He thought they were looking at him.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know what? I got to go fuck this guy's wife.
Yeah. So
that'll teach him.
Yeah. That'll show him not to hang out with me when I'm lonely. I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to prove. So he essentially asks without asking, like, hey, home cooked meal sounds nice. I sure am alone. And
yeah.
And so he invites him over, and he calls Betty. And there's this small moment that's just like one of my favorite moments in this episode where on the way to pick up the phone, Betty is holding her youngest son in her arms, smoking a cigarette. And he says, my eyes are burning. And she goes, that's impossible. And then picks up. Oh, wait. Yeah, here's the clip right here.
Impossible.
I don't know.
I totally missed that.
I don't know.
See, here's the thing is as we know from later in this episode and many episodes to come, Betty does need to be in analysis, just not for the reasons that her doctor and Don is are talking about.
Yeah, no, she is. She is very much like, you know, emotionally disturbed on many levels. And, you know, some of it, obviously, you know, having to do with her childhood, I'm sure. But like also she's just a suburban housewife in the 60s, like literally. Yeah. All of them have been traumatized by society in some way.
It's so aspirational for helicopter parents, though, where it's just like, you could just let them run wild, let them play with the plastic bag over their head. You blow smoke in their eyes. And then, you know, of course, we get Sterling's great line. You know, you're drinking at the bar. They tell you that your kid's been born.
that is
the next thing you know, they're in college.
That is one of the best fucking lines in this whole thing. It is so good. He ends up going to dinner. You know, with he eats over at Don and Betty's house. They don't have enough food, which Betty points out, and then cut to literally Roger is eating her steak. Like, her portion is just being gobbled up by this fucking drunken buffoon. And
she has a little bit of salad, a little bit of greens. You know,
a little bit of greens. And then she, you know, tells a story about how she used to be kind of fat. This scene is really interesting because this was my second time seeing this episode, but I didn't remember whether or not, like, I didn't see anything happening. You know, all I saw was like, oh, we're going to get some background on, you know.
Me too.
On Roger, some background on Don, or at the very least, we're going to get that Don doesn't want to talk about why he sometimes drops his G's, you know, and where he came from and stuff. And then even at the point at which, you know, Roger, you know, assaults Betty by, you know, like just trying to get in her pants. I'm still like, she's just drunk, or he's just drunk. You know, like this is she wasn't giving any signals at all. This is crazy. Only for Don to like be like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? You're hitting on him all night. It is fucking insane.
Yeah, like the question I have in that scene is like, what did Roger think was like best case scenario? What was gonna happen? Like, they were gonna make out, or he's gonna like fondle a titty, or like, Don was obviously coming back, and you know,
I think he wanted to steal a kiss with the promise of more, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's like in that in between stage between being deluded and being knocked out of delusion, which makes you desperate. And so, not that I have any knowledge of that personally.
Same.
I'm going off of a set of theories.
I've read about
it
in books.
The other thing I like about this, I've listened to the commentary before this recording.
Oh, wow.
Because I thought maybe there'd be some fun bits. And it is funny on the commentary when this scene opens, he says, this scene was fun, eating 42 steaks. and you got to imagine, you know, anytime you have to eat food, but especially if it's steaks over and over again, you're going to be hurting.
Yeah.
And they're probably not making it like a gourmet, you know, gourmet food for the prop either.
No, it's the steaks from The Fly when they're just testing the transporter steak versus the real steak or the regular steak.
Yeah. No, that all seems terrible. You have to imagine they also ate a fuck ton of oysters as well, just to shoot those scenes.
Yeah, but you can, I mean, I don't know. I could eat infinite numbers of oysters. They don't really like fill you up. You just keep eating them. That's what's great about them.
Vince and I are pro oyster, seems.
I'm not an oyster guy. I mean, I'll do it if I have to, but I've never understood like paying more money to have it. It's just nasty. Here's the scene in which Roger is hitting on Betty.
I can't believe you've had two babies.
Don't do that.
You've been making eyes at me all night. You can't tell me that I'm not giving you hot pants. You smell so good.
I can make more coffee.
I just want you to know that when I go to sleep tonight, I will be thinking all about you.
I'm sorry, like every line is worse and worse.
Yeah.
Even, and her trying to defuse it, he's just like, no, I got something more disgusting to say.
Hold on, I'm not done. The only John Slattery, in my opinion, could have played Roger Sterling. I think he is one of those characters, like, you know, only, I don't want to say only Tony Sirico could have played Polly, but it's close. Like only John Slattery.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Only John Slattery could be as lovable as and get away with stuff. Like I said, he's in another show with another actor. This would be, oh, this guy's the heel. Like he's the minor antagonist. But because of his delivery and his effortless charm, Roger can just basically get away with anything, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not saying, like, if he had gone further, he would have gotten away with that. But
he's he has so many good lines. I mean, that was my problem with, like, the second or there was only one line in this one that I didn't understand. Like, there's a couple Mad Men episodes where it's like weird jazz scat and I don't understand what the hell they're talking about. But this one, like, all of Sterling's lines are always like one liners that land where he's talking about shooting down the plane and Don's like, they gave you a medal for that. He's like, I got a medal for drinking.
Okay.
He's riffing.
Yeah.
We also have the great, all I got from that story is Hitler smoked and I don't. Or rather the other way around. And Hitler doesn't. Sorry, I blew the line.
Yeah.
By the way, speaking of blowing lines, on the commentary, they say when Robert Morris says goodnight peanut to him, they had to redub it because every take it sounded like he was saying goodnight penis.
Nice. They should have kept it in.
We should have cut that into the squirrel, the martyred right wing squirrel from the right wing news.
But this continues with one of my favorite lines that he says that we previously mentioned.
I was just saying what a lucky man you are. Beautiful children. Enjoy it. One minute you're drinking at a bar and they come and tell you your kid's been born. Next thing you know, they're heading off to college.
Just flawless delivery. Like, perfect. He's so nonchalant. He knows it's funny, but he's not really giving, you know, he's not goofy about it. God,
no,
it's
he's
perfect.
Not. I think one of the reasons why he can be so terrible and yet so likable is because he, as an actor, but also, you know, the character is written this way. He is so transparently vulnerable, but he's one of those people who just kind of likes to, like, just post through the vulnerability. He just, like, you see him so clearly as a sad, lonely man, and you see him for all of his faults, and you're mostly feeling sorry for him. You're not thinking about the context of, like, he is literally, like, Don's boss. He controls, like, you know, the fact that they get to live in this home and they get to have these cars. And he's never really threatening them in that way. But
he can be vulnerable because he's always been spoiled enough to be in a position where no one would call him out for it. Like, he's always been, like, a rich kid, an officer, the military. Like, now he's, like, the boss with his name on the side of the building. Like, he can be, you know, Elon Musk cringe and no one's going to.
But see, that's exactly what I was about to say. The other side of it, Vince, is that there can be a certain charm, which Roger Sterling is the epitome of being born with a silver spoon and living your life in a never, never land. Yeah. Elon is the other side of the coin, if you will, where you're as hateable as you could possibly be. Roger Sterling, everyone's like, God, he's almost kind of a magic little guy. Like, he's just, exists in this rich world.
Elon's more of a Pete, Sterling is more of like a Matthew McConaughey, where he just is like a good looking guy whose life has always gone well for him. So he's comfortable in his own skin and always happy, and you want to be around someone who's comfortable in their own skin. Like, someone who's uncomfortable in their own skin is fucking terrible to be around, and that is like Elon and Pete, where they're trying to be something that they're not, because there's like an insecurity, insecure people are not fun to be around.
Absolutely.
That's true. Yeah, kind of the worst. So Don,
except for this podcast and the three of us right now, which I'm enjoying.
Oh, it's like that line in Parasite where it's like, of course she's nice. She didn't have anything to, like, I forget what the line was, where it was like, of course they're nice people. They're rich. Like, they don't have anything to be angry about.
Yeah.
That's Roger.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, like juxtaposing that with his hatred for Kennedy, and like some of that obviously is, you know, him, his own self-hatred, because he's, you know, talking about the silver spoon and whatnot. But most of it is that he hates that Kennedy is young and hot. And that he doesn't fall into like the correct conventions of.
Do you have do you have Pete's little speech about that?
I do. This is the scene in which they're all trying to figure out how they're going to make Nixon beat Kennedy.
It's going to beat Kennedy. Boston Blackie won West Virginia.
Okay, so I had to look this up because I was like, what is Boston Blackie? Apparently, it is an old-timey sort of gangster novel series about some Irish scum who is is like a thief and, you know, a gangster. I love that so much. Like,
they're poking fun at Joe, Joseph Kennedy.
Yeah, right, so, yes, yeah. Making fun of Joe Kennedy.
Yeah.
Now, where does that leave us?
Catholic son of a millionaire, a boy too scared to do anything but go on vacation.
I met him. He is a boy.
He's only 4 years younger than Nixon.
But has he been sitting next to the leader of the free world for twice that time? He's inexperienced.
He doesn't even wear a hat.
I don't know. You know who else doesn't wear a hat? Elvis.
Elvis.
That's what we're dealing with.
Remind me to stop hiring young people.
My theory on this is they all kind of hate Pete for being kind of right about this.
He's right. He's obviously right. We know he's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they hate him for that. I mean, Roger hates all this for this very specific reason of feeling old and feeling unhot. And
the version of this would just be like a Zoomer telling us why Mr. Beast is popular or whatever, and we'd all just be like, oh, yeah, you're right, but shut the fuck up.
Shut the fuck up. We're not going to eat his poison Lunchables. Speaking of poison Lunchables, there is our perfect transition ad man, producer Brent. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? I actually need to take a break so I can work on Mr. Beast's show. But when we come, let's do some ads and then I'll be ready.
All right. So you heard him. We're going to take a break to eat some poison Lunchables, but please stick around because we will be right back.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
And we're back. So Dawn and Betty have been hanging out with Roger Sterling, and he has sexually harassed Betty. And now Dawn is mad at who? At Betty.
Yeah.
Yells at her.
It's always a woman's fault for tempting a man. That's what you have to remember.
So true, dude. So true.
Her dress was up to her ankles in that scene.
Yeah. Come on. This is a little bit off topic, but like I'm not an auteur theory guy, but there are certain elements in Mad Men that feel intentional, and I wonder if they're intentional, and I've like always wanted to like ask the people, but like Don, he seems to have a hat tan. Like he has the his forehead has like is like lighter here. I noticed this because, like, if you ever watch golf, whenever they take off their hat, they have, like, the worst, like, white forehead, like, tan face. And Don's got a bit of a hat tan, it looks like. And I wonder, like, if they put that in there to, like,
That's a great question.
Because he's wearing a hat. And then other things, like, Don.
I'm looking it up, and all I see, I looked up Don Draper hat tan, and mostly what I'm getting is Don Draper tan hat.
So. I think I've looked it up before.
Obama tan anything. Suit. Sorry.
Yeah.
Obama but it's like tan this, suit.
This show sort of makes me invent weird like theories like that because like Don and Betty's bodies, like they look like the bodies of a someone in the 60s where it's like they're like 60s hot where it's they're like kind of scrawny and husky and thin and fat all at the same time somehow.
Sure.
And then the other thing that I noticed, because we were talking about Alison Brie's voice, like she has a particular, like it's pre-vocal fry woman's voice where they sort of have a, they project in a different way.
She's got the transatlantic accent a bit as well, which I like.
Which is why it's perfect that he, that she and Pete are together because they both have a transatlantic accent.
I gotta say, one of my favorite parts about Pete Campbell is his voice, and it gets goofier as the series goes along, and they shave his hairline back, so Pete is getting kind of frumpier and older. Spoilers, right? We should watch out for those.
Yeah,
no, but like,
who cares? It's
the bit in the final season where he's being taken to task for his clan murdering another guy's clan in the in the fucking medieval times, and when he yells, "The king ordered it." That's the use of his voice.
I forgot about that.
That's one of the best lines of the show to me, and a lot of it is due to Pete Campbell's transatlantic style.
Yeah, it's wonderful watching. Dawn is really mad at Betty and spends the rest of the episode just being mad at her. I have the clip of them fighting.
What was that? I felt like someone turned the oven on when I came back in here with that bottle.
Okay, so what that means is that there was a lot of hot sexual tension in the room. I understand things.
Or it smelled like gas.
Yeah, I was thinking it could be that at first, but who knows?
Nothing happened, Don, other than your drunk boss ruining our evening. Can we leave it at that?
You made a fool of yourself.
Why would she say that?
You were throwing yourself at him, giggling at his stories.
I was being friendly. He's your boss.
I don't like to be treated that way in my own home. I know what I saw.
You want to bounce me off the walls? Would that make you feel better?
Sometimes I feel like I'm living with a little girl.
You know, this is the first time in this series so far that you are like, oh, Don might be capable of hitting his wife. You know, and that's not to say
he would absolutely bury her in the woods if he needed to.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know that he's capable of anything because he is, I think, you know, he has a past we don't know about. Right.
Really?
I don't actually know that we think he would do anything like murder, but
I was just kidding about him having a pass. So it was just a dumb joke. Do you think, I don't know. I think it's tested in this moment. I'm not trying to defend Don here, obviously.
Yeah.
I think it's tested in moments like these where if he were an uglier guy in that way, he would have probably hit her here. But he seems to evince in later episodes as well, bit more of a sophisticated attitude toward
I don't think he's insecure or being challenged on the level that he would do it, but I also think like if he really like needed to protect like his, you know, his identity or his like family status or whatever, you know, his position in society, I feel like he would, and he thought he could get away with it.
Yeah, but I guess for anyone's first time watching, right? This moment is interesting because you are not entirely sure that he wouldn't actually hit her,
right?
And it's kind of you know, it's like in The Sopranos when they I think it was episode 5 in which you first see you see Tony Soprano strangle a guy with his bare hands, and you're just like, oh shit, he's bad.
Right.
It's not obviously the same, but it is kind of like you don't know yet enough about this character
what he's
in
capable
order to
of
say that to know what he's capable of. Exactly.
And I mean this is a great Betty episode, like, you know, she can be like a prop at times in this show, like she's not always like the most interesting, but she was really interesting this entire episode. The incident at the grocery store is amazing.
Fantastic.
But, like, her line of what you want to bounce me off the walls, like you can tell that she cares less about possibly getting beaten up than getting a genuine reaction out of Dawn. And she's like, if you beating me up is what it takes for me to get like some genuine sense of your personality or like a genuine right. feeling out of you, like yes. so be it.
Also that disarms the opponent yeah. because yeah. then he will think to himself, well, I can't be that thuggish now that she's challenged me not to be, basically, yes. you know,
right.
and it puts her actually in a safer position physically to say, well, are you about to do that? Cause it's so predictable. And then the guy is right. going to go, oh fuck. Well, now I can't do it. You
oh,
know?
Well, I don't want to be hack.
Yeah. You know, it's like the South Park teacher.
I was going to do something original, like hit you.
Yeah, it's like the South Park teacher when they do like D's nuts and she diffuses it by saying, present them.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Right.
Present?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Present them. But yeah, so this there's a lot of pecking order going on here because then, you know, Betty is, you know, now being placed on the defensive and
right.
is at the grocery store minding her own fucking business.
So
and all of a sudden, Helen Fisher, this divorced freaking prostitute, comes up and is just like, why did you give a lock of hair to my to my son?
Sorry, go ahead. You yeah, have the clip?
Oh yeah, I have the clip. It is it's just great, man. It's great.
I was going through Glenn's treasure box the other day and I found a lock of blonde hair.
What else is in the treasure box?
I'd
yeah,
love
what
to
is
know.
Glenn
Can
got
you
him?
Imagine what Glenn has in that fucking box? Like,
God.
Like human hair is the least weird thing that he
I
has.
Just like having a doll's shoe.
I hope the hair is the only human thing in the box.
Yeah. yeah. You should see my flesh pile.
Yeah.
Right. Your hair, he says. Well, I don't know what he told you. Glenn doesn't lie, not when he's caught. I'm not saying it's a lie. Betty, he asked me for it, and you gave it to him. He is 9 years old. What is wrong with you?
And then she shoots her. The slap didn't really read, so I added a gunshot.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, it's so good because it's her. Like the when she gives Glenn the hair, there's like this potential narrative energy like that, and you're wondering... You're wondering what it's going to lead to, because obviously there's so much story potential, like what it creates that sense of like what is going to happen next. Like, obviously, you know, you're not going to give a 9-year-old boy a lock of hair and have it not come up again.
Right.
And then it's like a few episodes and then it does come up again and it delivers on like the potential of what what yeah. that could look like, because it plays out in like a way that's both predictable and surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a public slap is always fun. And also yes. it's like, because it's something that is
she could have killed her.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's something that is weird, but not like. It's not the worst thing anyone's ever done, but it is. If someone brings it up, you'd be like, I may have done something weird. If you were there in the moment, yeah. it made a lot of sense. He was crying. Yeah. He wanted to watch yeah. me take a piss. Like, a lot yeah. went into the before I cut off some hair and said he could have it.
And she just like doesn't want to explain all
she
that.
She doesn't want to explain
like,
that.
Fuck
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
And I also think she feels she also feels it's rude because like she probably didn't say anything about Glenn walking in while she was trying to take a piss, you know, like mm-hmm. she's like, I kept that shit to myself, yeah. you know, in order to protect you. You
yeah,
know?
She could have really owned yeah. that little boy if she had wanted to.
Yeah, if she wanted know? To, she could have.
Or she could have been like, oh, yeah, I gave him a lock of hair. What have you been doing? Just taking dumps in front of him, you
yeah.
weird lady?
Yeah,
turning around
fucking
on
weirdo.
Her.
It's learned behavior as far as
yeah.
I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, your house is full of cheeky dump lookers.
Cheeky dump lookers. It's very British. So then later we have Francine, the nosy ass neighbor, coming over. She's like, what happened? And then she explains, you know, what happened.
Really good Francine impression.
That is
I have a crush on Francine, I have to be honest with you. Anna yeah. Dudek is the actress, I think.
Is it? I don't know, but I'll
crush
say
on
yes.
her.
She's very, I mean, you know, she's beautiful. So is Helen. Everyone is beautiful in this show.
Yeah.
So she explains essentially, you know, I'm doing everything I can to make my way in this world, and the only currency I have is being hot. And it's just mm-hmm. like, Jesus Christ, that's dark. Mm-hmm. You know, just like the whole idea of like letting, I'm pretty sure my therapist was looking down my blouse at one point, and she's just like, and that's fine, you know, because I got to pay in some way. I'm like, this, there's
yeah. It's she says, I'm earning my keep.
I'm earning my keep. Yeah, which is very dark. Very, very dark. But
I have to say that I miss these earlier seasons with Betty, even though I said I like the show on average more as it goes along. I think it peaks around 5. Betty, she just doesn't, she kind of becomes a completely ancillary character in the later seasons, as does her husband. The two characters, not that anyone asked, but the two characters I really don't care about, I'm sorry, are Dawn's new wife and Betty's new husband. They're not terrible actresses and actors, but I never really care when we go back to see like Betty and Henry and whatever the fuck Dawn, what's her name? Megan's acting career. I don't give a
Megan,
shit.
Megan, yeah. Yeah.
I miss this era when we get to see how fucked up Betty is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was important for at this point in the season, because we had these two avatars for modern womanhood in the 60s with the Betty Draper and Peggy. And, you get to learn about the context of the time through them. And Betty in this episode, I think, is doing a fantastic job. She also did literally nothing wrong at that dinner. And I would say if she did, I'd call her out if she was being slutty. I'm the first person to do that.
Have we gotten to the slut call out feature on this season yet? Or I guess there hasn't been a need for one yet, but I'm
not
glad
yet,
you have it.
But there will be a slut call out.
I'm calling out those two sluts at the bar, just leering at Dawn.
Yeah, call out those sluts.
Mm-hmm. Will Ferrell in 30 Rock, Bitch Hunter.
No, but we do have a new segment called What? And this is just a segment in which the something I don't get happens. I will play that.
That's a good idea.
What?
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 What? What? Oh, okay. Oh, my God, it's still going. I was wondering how long it was going to go. I was impressed.
I was like, wow, he put just the right amount of what's in there, and then there was more.
I was about to walk away.
I added a drum fill of what's.
Very impressive.
So, there's a few things that happen. This one I'm certain is just a joke, but Pete is talking to Peggy about this account that she's landed, that she's writing copy for. He makes this, I guess it's a joke. I'm not sure what's happening here. Let me play it.
Mr. Rumsen liked what I did in the brainstorming thingy.
Sanitary napkins?
No, lipstick.
What'd I say?
It's the Bell Jolie account.
What did I say?
The other girl thing.
Oh.
It's just a stupid tossed off.
Okay, it's a tossed off joke.
I have a what segment for
please.
You.
Please, yeah, go ahead. Wait, let me play this thing again. No, I'm kidding.
It's in the beginning, and Cooper's talking about whether the Nixon people are going to come in, and he's like, if they did, I might have to move the piano. And I was like,
I didn't understand that either.
What was that one?
I remember you voicing your what earlier in the episode, Vince, and I don't know. I was following all the Nixon references.
Yeah.
It might be because he played it once or something.
Did he like break into song or something?
The Caracas reference I got.
Yeah.
The pink lady. That's Helen, what was her name? Helen Gagan Douglas. That was his opponent in 50 for the Senate. But I don't know the piano thing.
So I found it on Reddit. I just looked it up.
Redditor.
There's some
every
famous
podcast becomes this.
I know.
There's some famous photos of Nixon playing the piano and singing. I think he did it on some variety shows back in the day, and as a press op to say, "Hey, look at me, I'm down to earth and cut loose on the ivories," kind of like Bill Clinton with the saxophone.
Yeah, yeah. I think I remember him playing piano in the movie Frost Nixon. So I assume he was known for being maudlin on a piano, sounds awful. That leads us to
maybe it makes his knee act up too. Who knows?
He's riding that pedal on the piano and he banged it.
Yeah. So let's close out the storyline with Dawn and Roger. Dawn is still mad at Roger, and you see at one point Dawn goes up to the elevator operator and gives him some money, and you don't know what's going on there. And then cut to Don is doing the fucking the Roger Sterling diet on the same day in which the Nixon people are showing up later. So they are matching each other, oyster for oyster, martini for martini. And then they show up and the elevator is out of order, air quotes,
mm-hmm.
and they have to take the stairs. And then Roger is, at this point, I was trying to remember, I was like, is this where Roger has a heart attack? Or is that another episode, another season? No, this mm-hmm. is just the episode in which he throws up in front of the Nixon people. So he goes, he pukes, and then, you know, Don gloats. And
Don conquers.
Don conquers.
Vidi Vidi Vici. Vidi yeah. Vomit Vici, folks.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Vidi Vomit Vici. Just to say on the oyster thing, that was shot at, what's it called? Musso and Frank?
Oh, yeah, in L.A.
Which I only just recently went to when I visited L.A. and had a lovely steak there. That is yeah, where they shot the... I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those sort of musty steakhouses, but they shot it there.
Yeah, it's a Hollywood classic staple. Occasionally you'll see a movie, you know,
Hollywood like, Boulevard, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you'll see them like I think they ate at Musso and Frank in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
I was going to say it has one of my favorite lines in the show, which is I had no idea you were such a fan of the mollusk.
Yeah, that's what
Roger says.
Yeah.
I did have a question about that scene in particular because when they go to have the home cooked meal at Don and Betty's house, mm-hmm. they drink all of the vodka, and Don says something like, "Yeah, we're all out unless you want to break out the gin." And they both kind of make a face like, "Ew, gin." And then two scenes later, they're just down in martini after martini. I guess I'm left to infer that those are vodka martinis. I didn't understand the gin dynamics.
Is there,
and in my opinion, a vodka martini is not a real martini. It's made with gin, but that's
is there a rule?
Words,
maybe
fighting so, words here. I don't know what to say to that.
Maybe there's a rule like you know, liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Maybe you're supposed to do gin before vodka. I don't know. Or maybe they just think it's below them. Hard to tell.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, they drinking their ass off, and then he throws up fucking martini and oyster all over the place. I kind of enjoyed the way in which everyone sort of laughed it off.
What are you supposed to do? I guess, but it's still he's so humiliated, which is, and he looks so pasty and yes. just wilted. But apparently, in the commentary, John Slattery said they worked a tube up his suit pant leg. And then, you know, I guess it's probably what they do anytime someone does this. It reminds me of Tim and Eric style of gross out stuff where it's on the outside. But with this, they had it taped next to his mouth and they did three versions. One, it didn't go on long enough. One, it went on too long. And then, which I kind of wish they had kept.
Yeah, I wish
and
they
kept that. One was the Goldilocks, but it's still a pretty good vomit take.
Yeah, it looks like a lot of vomit takes, you can tell it's a smaller tube. And that one just looked like a fire hose of puke. And that was what was, it was like the abruptness of it. And like the size was just, it really made the comedy land.
Clam chowder was the substance.
It looked like clam chowder, which, you know, it worked. And yeah, the just the look on Don's face when he's like he's bested this old man by keeping up with him in the drinking and the smoking and the eating of the oysters. And, you know, it's almost like, hey, you may be able to get away with trying to fuck my wife, but I can, you know. I can beat you in an arm wrestling contest.
Well, I also like that Don's not totally solid. Like, it's not like he did the Better Call Saul, like, draining his drink, you know, like, secretly. Right. Like, he's in pretty rough shape when he's at the top of the stairs, too. But he's got that little bit of edge of youth, I guess, over Roger. So he was risking a bit himself, you know, which mm-hmm. I like.
We had a listener suggest we do sort of a drunk-o-meter for Don because so much, like, throughout the show, you see him at various stages of drunk and or just kind of buzzed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, certain episodes, you watch the progression of him getting drunker throughout the day. So, yeah, at some point, we'll start giving him a rating
as to how drunk he is. You should. It's like the terror alerts, the colors, you know.
Level orange.
And this the social like equivalent of the terror alert you know, happens when he gets really drunk, man. That was one nice thing about watching the show was I didn't know any of this. Like, I didn't know the character of Don Draper. I just knew, you know, he looked slick and was in his I feel bad for you meme and all that.
Yeah.
But the when you start the show, especially as a fella, you know, you're looking and you go, oh man, like look at this guy. He looks the era, of course, helps, but he looks so slick, Don Draper. And then by the end of the show, you're like, well, God, I got a lot of problems, but at least I'm not Don fucking Draper.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah, it could be a lot worse. I could be Don Draper. So the last final thing we need to talk about is because we pretty much talked about what happened with Pete in this episode. Is Pete, after he gets yelled at for buying the gun, you see him sitting in his office feeling emasculated. He's been emasculated throughout this entire episode. Like, he has been told that, you know, he's a bitch because he's gonna go return something to a department store,
also by the little old ladies in line.
Right, you know? Yeah, even the old ladies in line are just like,
you wouldn't know my husband because he's not a pussy.
Yeah, he's not a bitch like you. He doesn't do errands during lunch. He hangs out and does man stuff. So he's feeling like total trash, and Peggy shows up to take him up on his offer of notes that, you know, he had mentioned earlier. And he goes on this fucking wild tangent about this dream he wishes for himself, in which to one day return to a time where men could be men. It is amazing, and I have the clip.
But you know what I've always wanted to do? I would pick it up, throw its back legs over my shoulder, and I would drag it through the snow to this little cabin. And there, I'd hang it up between a couple of trees. Cut it open, drain it, dress it. And then I'd take my big hunting knife and I'd cut this loin right out of the side. And I'd go into the cabin and there'd be this woman waiting for me.
We'll call her Mama or Mutter.
Standing by one of those old stoves with a big black pipe, and I'd hand it to her and she'd put it in a cast iron skillet. And then I'd sit at the table and she'd bring it to me, and I'd wipe my knife on my knee, and then I would eat it while she watches.
That would be wonderful.
I'll take a look at this for you.
I think Peggy's such a weird little freak too.
Yeah, she's a fucking freak, dude. Because like, all I could think in that moment is like, she's got to be freaked out. And instead, she's so horny, she gets herself a pastry.
And a ham sandwich.
Yeah. She is horned up by this.
She's all pregnant.
Oh yeah, that's right. But I don't think people know that yet.
Yeah, but I think that was the clue was how much she's eaten. It's like, she's all horned up for meat, and she's trying to eat ham, and she's eating ham and pastry.
Oh, I got that as just purely just she's so horny she doesn't know what to do with herself.
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, she's obviously sublimating her appetite, you know, sexually. Mm-hmm. By the way, Pete's secretary, I think her name is Hildy. She is in L.A. Noire.
There you go.
Also, we missed the scene where he's showing the gun. We saw William Gladys. He's in L.A. Noire. Roger Summer, who plays Harry Crane. One of my favorite characters, by the way, Harry Crane. He is in L.A. Noire.
Damn.
I think that's everybody.
Is Don Draper in L.A. Noire?
John Hamm is not in the game so far as I know. Maybe in a DLC. People think, I'm sure you guys have heard this, people think Elizabeth Moss is in it. That is erroneous. It is actually a different actress. But so there's no Elizabeth Moss in the game.
Is it Elizabeth Debicki? Because she looks a hell of a lot like,
I don't know who that is.
It's not even an Elizabeth, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I can believe it. I also very much enjoy that he, in his fantasy, after, like, you know, getting cooked to the meat, this woman just watches him eat it. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want her to watch and see me consume the meat.
Tell me I'm mommy's good boy.
Yeah, tell me I'm mommy's good boy and I'm gonna grow up big and strong.
Going so big and strong, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a fantastic episode. And yeah, is there a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or anything that we missed, Vince?
Ooh, I forgot to write anything down for favorite scene, least favorite scene. You know, I like the puke.
I like
moment.
It all.
I liked all of Sterling's line, all of Roger Sterling's lines in
that. Okay. What about you, Brendan? Favorite scene, least favorite scene, or something we missed that you desperately want to talk about?
Yeah, not necessarily favorite or least, but I like the scene, we didn't mention it, where it's the next day after Roger's groping. Mm-hmm. And he comes in, and I love how he comes in with a bottle of whiskey, and he's got a huge smile on, like he's overdoing it. He sees Don, he's like, there's my guy. But you know he's calculating how pissed off is this guy.
Yeah.
And he turns on the Sterling charm, but he then goes on to compare Don's wife to a garage. And that does not appear to go over well and does not land with Don. So the vomit plan continues.
Is hatched. Yeah, no, that's a great scene. And you know, I like that even in when he is like driving home after drinking his ass off from, you know, at Dawn and Betty's house, he also almost gets into the wrong car at that moment too. Which you know, so
classic gag off-screen off-screen buffoonery that you he's shouting about wrong car, wrong lights car. On.
Yeah. Real fun stuff. And yeah, that's the episode. If I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, shit, I think I'm giving this one a B+. Vince, what are you going to give this episode?
You're not going to believe this. I'm going to give this one a solid B+.
Whoa, that's crazy, dude. And Brendan James, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Now, I've been on the show before. I think I gave the Sopranos episode a B+.
Yeah, possibly. I don't remember.
I think that's what I Could gave be. That one. But a different show. With this show, it's fresher in my mind. I've now seen the episode twice. I'm really connected to it. And it's probably a little bit better on average compared to the Sopranos episode was on average.
For sure.
So this time I'm going to go with a B+.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, it is a surprise rating from Brendan James.
Yeah.
Which makes this a solid B+ episode of Mad Men and a solid A+ episode of Mad Yourself a Man, the world's only Mad Man podcast. Brendan James, thank you so much for coming by and talking Mad Men with us.
Guys, thanks for having me back. I'm excited to hear the rest of the Mad Men Odyssey from two Mad Men themselves.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. The maddest men.
Made the connection that we are also
that we're also mad.
Yeah,
I'm super mad all the time, dude. Mm-hmm. Fucking 2-year-old getting me sick. But Brendan, where can people find your work on the internet?
Well, I co-host and produce a show called Blowback, which is a history show with Noah Colwin, another friend of the show, I believe.
That's right. Yes.
And it's a show. Our first season was about the Iraq War. We've done the Cuban Revolution. We've done the Afghanistan wars, and we just did our fifth season about the Cambodia and Vietnam conflict. So you got your Nixon in that season, and your Kissinger and your Pol Pots and all that. So if you want to go check that out, if it sounds good, blowback.show is where you can subscribe. Just hit the big button, and we just put out some merch this very day, actually. So by the time people hear it, it'll certainly be out. And stay tuned for the next season. But until then, sign up, blowback.show.
It is a great show. It is one of the few shows that I think people should be paying for. It is a show that is worth every cent. You guys put a lot of great research into it, do a lot of great work there. So if you haven't listened to Blowback, do that now.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s guy.
Patreon.com/frontcast. $8 tier gets you a shout out, which means that you get a fucking good old boy name and a slogan for your company. Vince. The first name we have is Vic Vega.
Oh, sounds like we got a Tarantino fan here. Toothpick Vic, our man in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're calling this guy, what's a good name for a foot fetish guy?
Oh,
we'll call this guy Twinkle Toes.
Yeah, Twinkle Toes for, you know, for all your piggy needs. This piggy went wee-wee-wee all the way to the market. Okay, next is Greg Barrier.
Hey, we call this guy Coral. Coral. We call this guy Coral because he sounds like a reef. Am I right?
Oh, yes. You know, you call him Coral? Coral. If you're gonna pick any brand, pick us. All right, next is Keith Harden.
Yeah, we call this guy Cement.
Cement. Be hard like a rock, but better.
Wait,
all right.
Should we say cement or concrete? I think concrete's better.
All right, fine. You can be hard like concrete, like a rock, but better. It's, it works for either one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, John Skolitich. Skolitich?
I say school teach.
School teach. School teach. Okay.
I say, yeah.
Oh, his nickname's school teach.
That's what, well, I call him the professor.
Oh, the professor. This Professor X will mind fuck you for fun. I don't know. Oh, I'm sorry, everyone. I'm sick.
I'm so tired.
Okay, two more. Byron Hooper.
The Blooper. Betty Bloop.
My boy Bloop. Call him Augustus Goop, because this guy's about to go bloop in the sea of chocolate. And finally, Darren Bloomgren. Darren Bloomgren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. We call this guy, jeez.
Well, this is the last one, dude. You can do this. Bloomgren. Bloomgren.
Bloomgren. Springtime. We call...
Springtime. Come on, anything, man. We're so close. Don't fail me now, dog. Please.
We call this guy Flowers.
Flowers.
Because he's pushing up daisies.
This guy is pushing up the Bloomgrens. It's springtime for Hitler. And those are your shout-outs for the week. Night, the Dayquil is hit. I am on another planet. If you haven't heard your name, frogcast@gmail.com, please let us know. But there's, you know, there's more names coming out every day. And thank you. Patreon.com/frogcast, frogcast@gmail.com for your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's about a lot of things, dog. This is how this fucking song ends? What is, this is RJD2. I fucking... loathe you. This is the shittiest song I've ever heard. I thought, like, the actual song would be good. Like, nah, this sucks. Solid B plus, though.
Brendan, talk a bit.
Yo, turn me up. Mad Men remix.
My wife is a child. She has the mind of an infant.
Baby wife. Baby life. Okay.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.